For many people, the pursuit of a spiritual life is in a certain sense a pursuit of otherness. It's a getting away from life, moving toward what one imagines in oneself as the transcendent, which is something that your mind tells you is different than this. What you and so many of us seek is essentially the end of pain, the end of bodily discomfort, the end of unhappiness, the end of dissatisfaction, and somehow we want something that is, I think in most of our mindsets anyway, blissful, without pain and suffering, something that is really paradisical, meaning that it is all pure joy. I think that's the secret underpinning of many people's spiritual lives. That somehow if you do all the right things, you will get there. And if you don't get there in this lifetime, you'll get there in the next lifetime. And that in the end, if you behave well, if you meditate well, if you live well, the end of suffering arrives, and with it a state of constant, unchangeable happiness. Sounds good. But in human experience, nothing is unchangeable. So we seem to be in an endless state between the joyful and the unjoyful, the comfortable and the uncomfortable, the positive and the negative. It seems to be the ongoing human experience. And that's why so many people think of spiritual life as transcendent, meaning somehow we get beyond the yin and the yang of human life. You know, maybe that's true. Maybe at some juncture in the spiritual pursuit, you escape this. But my evolving sense of it is that the one thing you know and that you have a certainty about is that you are here now in a world of changeability. And that your desire to escape changeability is the very cause of the very desire to leave the world, that your hunger for stasis, for permanence on some level, is the very cause of your suffering. Because you can't get there. Everything you try doesn't work. No matter how good you are for 1 hour of sitting, no matter how good you are at being still and quiet and in a place of total peace and total joy, perhaps if you're lucky, when the class is over and you get back into the body, into the mind, into the day-to-day, the same old stuff comes back. There you are, still you. So you may be led to think, well, if I sat in a monastery and did this all day long, maybe I would get there. Or if I went to a 10-day retreat I would get there. As though there was somewhere. As though there was somewhere in this world that was transcendent of the yin and yang of your daily moment-to-moment existence. And it has come to me over a period of practice that what you're really looking for comes not by running away from yin and yang, from the duality of our apparent lives, but the embrace of it, the acceptance of it, that this is it, that this dual functioning world that we live in, this happy, sad state that we seem to oscillate through, is our life. It is the real life. And that somehow accepting that in some very deep and fundamental way is the very peace, if you will, that you're looking for. Not by trying to get beyond it, but by trying to say yes to it. I was sitting the other day with some kind of pain and had all the instinctual moves and desires to eradicate it, but decided no, just sit in the pain. Don't fight it, don't be angry at it, don't think of it as something punishing or something other. It's just pain. It really is just life. So I just sat in it. And I just accepted it as a kind of wondrous thing, really. Because it was extraordinarily real. It hurt. There it was. And I realized many, many people, if not all human beings, ultimately arrive at a place of inescapable hurt. Either the grief of leaving the world, or the grief of losing other people in the world, or the grief of your own biological discomfort, whatever it is, we all, at some point, arrive at a place that really, really is painful. Hugely painful. And the mind hates it. The mind gets really angry. The mind feels like life betrayed us, that it isn't fair, that why me, God? How did I get into this awful, awful state? And all I can tell you is, when you finally understand that this isn't going to end, that this is reality, that somehow God is pain, which nobody quite wants to accept. But once you go, okay, something extraordinary happens. And what happens is that pain embraced is the absolute mechanism through which one goes into singularity. The absence of struggle, the willingness to accept the awfulness, and I mean awful in every regard, full of awe and awful as unpleasant. As you accept that, and you just go yes to that, it is the unlocking of a door. And I think it is the fundamental unlocking of a door for every human being into the transcendent. And the transcendent is not away from pain, it is into the heart and core of pain, and the heart and core of hurt. And you might think that sounds terrible. You might think that sounds like, why would the universe ever want to create something that terrible? But it's the opposite of terrible. Rudy always said that pain was God's love, which used to make me crazy. What does he mean? I never wanted to hear that. I always hated the idea of pain. I've never embraced pain. But here I was the other night, sitting in my pain, realizing there's nowhere to go, there's nothing I'm going to do about this, and just sitting there, and then having this, it's a kind of like separation that occurs. But it's not really a separation, it's just the opposite. It's a merging into the pain, and as you go into it, as opposed to away from it, what happens is there is no you and it, there is only it. Or, if you will, there is only what is. There is no you reacting to it, there is only the thing itself. And as you enter the thing itself, and when you have really great pain and you can't escape it, there is nothing to do but enter it. As you enter it, you enter unitive experience, if you will. Experience being the wrong word, because experience implies you and something to be experienced. But you enter the thing itself. And the thing itself is, if you will, God itself. It's reality itself. It is the totality itself. And yes, it comes in that moment as pain, but as you become consumed by pain, and it literally means consumed, the thing that is consumed is the separateness that is experiencing the pain, and as that separateness disappears, pain is no longer something to be experienced. It is just pure being. Pure being is and has always been this extraordinary singular entity, singularity of being, which is God as whole, as totality. But in that singularity is yin and yang. It is at the very core of singularity. Singularity has always been, I assume, I can't speak for infinity, but one senses that singularity has always had within it this duality of yin and yang. But the moment yin ceases to fight yang, oneness. The experience of oneness is described in all of the great teachings as Satchitananda, truth, consciousness, and bliss. Bliss being a funny word, because we think of it as happiness and therefore opposite of unhappiness. But bliss has no opposite. Bliss is not a state in opposition to anything. It is a state of pure being. It is the nature of pure being. Truth, or reality. The sense of reality is an overwhelming awareness. What we are all trying to do in our daily practice, moment to moment, is to awaken to the fact that this is reality. This very instant is reality. When you awaken to that truth, the whole configuration of the yin-yang, good, bad, happy, sad world that we're in suddenly, even while we're living it, even while we're aware of it, becomes present. And as it becomes present, it, in a sense, overwhelms. And what does it overwhelm? It overwhelms your separateness. It overwhelms the sense that you are somehow other than it. And you become washed over by the ocean of being, and you sense the awe and the wonder of being in reality, being one with reality. This is the great human arrival, if you will, at conscious awakening. You just become aware that this very instant is it itself, it with the capital I. This is the very thing you have been seeking from the beginning. This instant of reality. And that will mean that if in this instant you are hurting, sad, confused, angry, thrilled, excited, whatever you are, if you become aware, meaning present within it, if you awaken to it and the reality of it, you become overwhelmed by it. It takes over, if you will. It releases you from your separation from it, and there is oneness. That oneness may last, it may not last. It may wave in and out. It will do whatever it wants to do. But the mere tasting of it is enough to know that your separate life is only separate in time, for time. It is not, if you will, a permanent condition. There is no such thing as a permanent condition. The very thing which is, if you will, permanent and infinite somehow embodies you. You exist within the permanent and the infinite. You as a individual being arise within this extraordinary state of the eternal, and you leave, if you will, you disintegrate, you return to the eternal, and the whole ride of life, if you will, is an opportunity to become conscious of the eternal in the mundane, in the finite, the infinite within the finite. And every human being who becomes aware of this moment touches the infinite. And as you touch the infinite, you become pregnant with it, you become full of it, you become overwhelmed by it, you become one with it. And that is as good as it gets. If you are still hungering for otherness, when you sit in meditation, you may have these moments of such unbelievable bliss that you never want to leave it. But the problem with that is you're then deeply, deeply attached to the yin and don't want to have the yang. But where in life is that possible? Where do you go from one and not return to the other? There's no harmony or balance in that. You return from that extraordinary bliss into the hard physical reality of life, and in a sense, they give each other measure and quality. You only know that bliss because of the hardness and the durable heart sort of reality of your day-to-day life. One becomes all the more attractive because the other is so unattractive on some level. But the attractive and the unattractive are part of the same spectrum. So trying to seek one over the other cannot be done and will only lead you to frustration, suffering, grief, sadness, and hurt. So we approach the spiritual practice of meditation to find peace, if you will, to find stillness, to find the joy of being. And then we enter into the world of demand, of effort, of frustration, of satisfaction, of completion, all of these things that happen in day-to-day life. But the act of meditating, allows us a perspective, if you will, on the day-to-day that releases us from the ignorance that is often brought to bear where we feel it has no connectivity to what is. The suffering so many of us feel is separation. separation from reality, separation from truth, separation from the infinite. We walk around scared of our shadow because we feel unprotected in the world. But when you start to feel reality, you touch this note in yourself, you touch this nerve in yourself, you touch this thing that radiates so deeply, that goes so profoundly into the very root of reality, that you feel at that very instant connected to all that is and ever was and ever will be. You just feel one with it all. You may not walk around feeling transcendently connected, but you feel that your individual momentary existence is somehow informed by, connected to, and united with all that ever has been. And it is unbelievably completing. That your own day-to-day, moment-to-moment existence is, in its own imperfect way, perfectly connected to the whole purpose of being. So you can either go on that ride, consciously or unconsciously. You can go through day-to-day life blind to your own connection to the universe, or you can feel yourself informed by and in service of that world, that larger sense of being. And that's the real difference between a meditative life and a non-meditative life. One is aware to some degree, or maybe to a large degree, and one is unaware. And awakening, which seems to be the key idea of all meditation, awakening or realization, you know, you've heard that from day one, is awakening to what? It's awakening to what is real. And what is real is this. This is real. Take it or leave it. With all of its, you know, mundane, dull aspect, with all of its unbelievable joy and beauty, whatever this is it, guys. Period. Ain't any better than this. It will never be better than this or different than this. This is a profound thing that has really overtaken me in my own practice. You know, even when I'm really messing up, even when I'm living a life of, and I do, just like everybody, live a life of confusion and concern and, you know, will we run out of gas and, you know, am I going to overeat today? And, you know, all the stuff of daily life, that is reality. That's it. Absurd as it seems. Who would think that these little problems, you know, the fact that the toilet's leaking is part of the larger reality? But it is the large, it's what's happening. You know? And when you grasp that, grasping being the wrong word, but when you awaken to that, it makes life the wonder that it is. And when you don't have that, then it's just the toilet broke. And it's miserable. Same event, same story, same situation. But one is part of something bigger, and one of them is just you being unconscious and disconnected and suffering. Choice. It's all your choice. That's Rudy said that all the time. He said, spiritual work is choice. You can choose to be conscious or you can choose to be unconscious. Unconsciousness doesn't often feel like a choice, but trust me, it's a choice. Choosing to be unconscious is a way of avoiding responsibility. If you're unconscious, then you don't have to feel responsible for the fact that you have to fix the toilet or that you've got to do the work that's in front of you. Being unconscious makes you not have to feel, you know, that you have obligation to function. Being unconscious allows you to mess up in a very deep way, and people do and want to, because it seems like the easier path. Being conscious means responsible to the day-to-day demands of your life, which are what? Providing food for yourself, having rest, exercising and being healthy with your body. These are all, this is what is given to us. you know, you open any newspaper, magazine, that's what it's talking about. How do you eat well? How do you live? How do you politic in the world? How do you find ways to help society, help others, help the people around you? How do you do all that? That's reality. You know, one way or the other, this is the world you live in. You've got to start with the circle that's right in front of you. This is the mandala of human experiences. There's you at the core of your particular life. Then there's the people around you and the people around them, and it circles out. And you are responsible to that. Very responsible to the stuff at the inner core, and to some degree responsible for everything that's around you. The more conscious you are, the more you will serve the larger mandala of your life, as well as the inner circle. You know, Rudy used to talk about people who they only wanted to help the outer circle. You know, let's worry about humanity. But they were terrible to their children, terrible to their wives and to their partners and to their, you know, to their parents. You know, they were concerned about humanity. That doesn't work. That's a deeply unconscious kind of reality. Reality starts right where you are. And then you go to the next step and the next and the next. It's all very simple. None of this is complicated. It never was complicated. We make it complicated, as Rudy said, because we choose it to make it complicated. You know, or as you choose to be confused. This is what we do. Life does not have to be that way. And what we're doing in this very moment of sitting here together is sharing this opportunity to awaken to the reality that this is real. Period. Which you can do right this second. You know, and if you're sitting here thinking about what I'm saying, you're separating yourself instantly from everything I'm saying. If you're going, that's interesting, I don't know if I agree with that. You're already totally out of reality. You're into a separation mode. On the other hand, if you can watch yourself doing that, then you're back in reality. You're watching how your mind works. Watch the mind. The mind is separating me. And the mind keeps this thing going on. And you see this, and what happens is you start to know this without thought. You start to observe this with consciousness. Consciousness knows, it doesn't think. Consciousness is aware without conceptualizing. Consciousness is you observing mind, body, thought, movement. It's aware of it. It feels like thought sometimes, and thought arises in that. Nisargadatta called it honey mind. I always like that. Honey mind is not our normal stuff. It's like, it's kind of what you get during meditation. Little thoughts coming up, clarifying. That's mind operating in consciousness. It's very gentle, it's very exploratory, it's very smart. It teaches you, it tells you stuff. And then you go to a place where that's not happening either. You're just knowing. You just know. And it doesn't have to be brought into any verbal form, any kind of conceptual form. It's just. And then you watch yourself be. But in truth, you're not watching yourself be. You're just being. Because real consciousness is in the act. It's in the present. It's just being yourself. There's no reflection on being yourself. It's just being. And it's amazing how that works. When you're just being, you're completely in tune with and in alignment with the universe. It doesn't mean you won't run out of gas. Rudy always said, when you're unconscious and you run out of gas, you've got to hitchhike 5 miles to a phone and get a can and come back to your car. When you're conscious and you run out of gas, he says you run out of gas next to a gas station with a great restaurant attached. You still run out of gas because that's the karma of your life. But it just turns into something other. And you just move with that flow. You know, not that you can live to make it work like that. That's already problematic. It's just when you're in flow, and things happen. And when it doesn't happen, you know, when you stand outside and the cab doesn't come, you know, which is always my big thing because I always get anxious about cabs, you have an opportunity to just accept not getting what you want or what you think you need. And that opportunity, even by itself, expressed consciously, lived fully, is deeply instructive. It informs your life. It makes you part of this extraordinarily vibrant universal cycle of getting and not getting, of having and not having, of joy and sadness. And that is always going to be there. So forget this idea that spiritual life is going to give you pure happiness, unending. Forget that it's going to take you out of suffering, because it's not. If anything, it's going to bring you into suffering, because you're going to become raw as can be in terms of your nervous system and your availability to the demands of the world, and it will awaken you beyond belief to what life is. Human suffering will now become something so powerful that it will engender in you the one great gift of suffering, which is compassion. You will have enormous compassion for every other person on the planet. You will have enormous empathy for everyone on the planet, because when you are in a state of suffering, you understand, one, what it feels like, two, that everybody else is experiencing it in some way, and three, that if you can stick it out, it's a doorway to the most beautiful reality imaginable. So stop looking for the other. Stop looking for it to be different. Stop looking for it to somehow arrive at perfection. This is perfection. You're in it as you sit here right now. I don't care if your back hurts, you have to go to the bathroom. I don't care if you wish you were somewhere else. I don't care what is going on inside you. It is absolutely perfect as it is. And once you get that, you'll get it. Period. Any questions? I can't tell if you guys are getting angry at me for saying this, or if this is it so goes against the grain, this idea that we shouldn't pursue our happiness. I mean, that we shouldn't pursue otherness. So many of our lives are based totally on that. That the idea of somebody telling you that your suffering is part of the whole is such an unpleasant thing for the mind to hear. But when you truly know this to be true, it changes the whole complexion of the experience. Okay. Thank you guys for coming. I'm heading back to the West Coast. I will be back here the end of May or the end of April or early May. Blanche will be here. She will send out a list of the dates when the classes are. And, you know, thank you guys for supporting her in her teaching, because Blanche is a wonderful teacher, and your being here to support that enriches both her and, I hope, you. And you know, our years are, my coming and going seems to me to be a very odd thing on some level, but it's proving to be quite wonderful. There's a very real nourishment that happens in Los Angeles for me and everybody there. There's a wonderful nourishment that happens here, and there's a lot of cross-pollination that occurs, and in the end, I think everybody is the flowers are prettier as a result. So thank you guys again for coming. Deeply appreciate it.